Welcome to the CEN show, the voice of the world community. This evening, we have another host. We got Brother Thomas is hosting tonight. And we want to recognize day three of Kwanzaa, which is Ujima, collective work and responsibility. And Professor Ra is on here, but something's going on with his sound. I was going to let him speak on it, but let me just introduce Brother Thomas Horn, Brother Tommy Lee Horn, and Thomas Muhammad, that's what he go by. Brother, he's one of our members with our organization, Community Education Network, and he's been on our show as a guest numerous times with a lot of great topics and really things to make you think about our situation as Black folks. So with further ado, it's Brother Thomas Muhammad. He's going to be our host for this evening. So take over, Brother Thomas.
Thank you, sir. Greetings, family. How y'all doing? I'd like to, if Baba Ra it can hear, I'd like to ask him permission to, okay, thank you. Just like what Brother Rasaki said, happy Kwanzaa. Today is collective work and responsibility, and it's a topic that I think coincides with today's third day of Kwanzaa principle. The title of today's presentation is called Voting, the Pacification of Effective Black Activism. I believe that this is a topic that I'm very, very passionate about as it pertains to the direction the Black community is going in terms of improving our condition in America and the strategy that we use to do so. I believe that the strategy that we use has been a strategy that have been imposed upon us by the same individual that enslaved our ancestors. They gave us a solution that was intentionally never to work in our behalf. And in doing so, we have fully taken the reins of their solution. And after, let's say, 80 years, we're talking from 1960s, about 60 years, actually. We've used their imposed solution, and it just has destroyed not only our communities, it's destroyed unity amongst ourselves. It destroyed us effectively responding to injustice. It has destroyed the passion that we had and the ability to produce leadership that had come up with working solutions to resolve the situation to where we weren't fully relying upon those who enslaved us. So I'm going to read a little excerpt of what I wrote in behalf of this topic, and then we're going to pose questions to the audience to see how they feel or how they respond, to get their response to my position as it pertains to voting, the pacification of effective Black activism. All right, so voting has replaced effective Black activism for justice and universal change in the condition of America's former Africans in bondage to that of a passive and active political lottery player. The Black activists have been reduced to being pimped by a political process that only serves those who have the money to make it work for them, while Blacks are relegated to using voting booths like slot machines in hopes that the next candidate will fulfill idle promises of doing for Blacks what effective Black activism used to do or used to demand that we do for ourselves. Voting was supposed to be one of the many methods used to rebuild the lives of Black people post-slavery after the procurement of land, the building of Black-owned, ran and operated Black communities, the development of Black businesses that hires Black while meeting the needs of a Black customer base, and the construction of Black infrastructure that enables Blacks to not rely on their former slave owners to do for them what they can do for themselves. After this was successfully attained, built, and maintained by independent wealth and self-sufficient national Black populace, the politics can then be practiced properly in accord to quid pro quo, how it was meant to be effectively practiced. Once such owned, ran and operated, and built and maintained communities are ran and built and maintained, then spread throughout the United States, Black people would then be able to participate in the political process successfully. Black people will be able to practice a system to raise, teach, train, and fully subsidize a Black community-made politician. This is how we get involved. If once we have our Black-owned communities, and once we have a way to subsidize our politicians, we could raise them up in our communities. We can make sure that they have all the resources to be able to champion our causes when they go to Washington, because they'd be trained, raised, reared, and they'd even live in the communities that they serve. You know, like Caucasian politicians do. Caucasian politicians are subsidized by their community. A constituency is not somebody that supports a politician, that merely supports them. A constituency is somebody that pays that politician for service. That politician relies on their constituency for campaign contributions to run their campaign. They rely on them throughout their whole term to finance, support, and vote in behalf of the politician. So once we have created a community that's self-sustaining, that has a strong economic base, we can now raise politicians that support our cause and that do not have their hands out when they go to Washington waiting to be bought by the first resources made available to them that eventually usually are made available by the very descendant of the slave owners that enslaved their ancestors. All right, so we can subsidize our politicians. These subsidies would enable Black people to ensure that their Black politicians, without question, champion the cause of their true constituencies. Because, like I said, constituencies are not people that vote for a politician, it's people that finance the politician. It's almost like going to a restaurant. A constituency, as it pertains to a restaurant, is somebody that goes inside of the restaurant, patronizes the restaurant, purchases the food. The money is used to maintain the restaurant services, to secure them and maintain their services. That's what we'd be able to do by being able to subsidize our own politicians that we groom within our own communities. The wealth that we amass in our communities could also subsidize Black lobbyists to secure political support throughout the year, like Caucasians do. These corporations, Caucasian people in general, they subsidize lobbyists that live or stay in Washington year round, making sure that they have their ear to the grind to ensure that any policy that crosses the table, anything that's voted on, is something that was sanctioned, supported, and even brought forth as a potential policy to be voted on, was supported by the lobbyists that were financed by the constituency, by the businesses, corporations, those who wanted their cause championed. We'd be able to have black lobbyists throughout the year doing the same thing for us in Washington. Like I said, if we were to actively come together and once again form separate black-owned, rent and operated communities where we finance, employ, educate, train and groom our politicians, and maintain a black level of excellence that produces professionals all across the board that finance the cause of black people. So we got the lobbyists to secure political support, influence public policy, and manipulate the political process overall in favor and support of the interests of said members of these independent ran black communities nationwide. After slavery during the Reconstruction era, America's former slaves had begun to do this within or under Jim Crow segregation. However, a power structure was looking at how effective we were, and this is how they responded. Caucasian America, who was able to see the future of the power and immense threat of black unity in black-owned, ran and operated communities that blacks were forced to build due to segregation, they began to notice that black people, the wealth and power that they amassed, would eventually surpass Caucasian America if left unchecked. They feared black progress, and they knew that the spontaneous terrorizing lynching of successful black business owners and philanthropists, coupled with the burning down of black communities, businesses, and homes, were only temporary setbacks to a thriving black populace with untapped resources and growing political power. Like ants, after a natural catastrophe that destroys the colony, blacks would simply rebuild, restructure, replan, reorganize under Jim Crow segregation. Caucasian America had to come up with a plan to not only destroy the threat of black-owned, ran and operated black communities, but they had to destroy the very idea of black unity as a whole. They had to replace segregation with something that would manipulate blacks into using their wealth, power, and influence to fill the coffers of former slave owners, along with destroying any chance of consolidating black power. That is when the concept of integration was invented. During a time when blacks were beginning to become politically aware of the power of separate but equal laws, which would require America's government to use a great amount of its budget, making black separate and unequal infrastructure equal to that of Caucasian America, an organization that was founded and financed by so-called liberal Caucasians, coupled with a few black leaders, began to use their wealth and the support of some well-known black scholars masquerading as black leadership to spread the need for integration as the solution for black acceptance and eventual prosperity. After blacks all across America had been manipulated to support integration, within a matter of a few decades, black-owned, ran, and operated communities were decimated, along with black infrastructure that employed and maintained millions of black families. I not only believe, but I read and researched due to Dr. Claude Anderson's book, Powernomics and the Black History Reader and Black Labor, White Wealth. The NAACP was that organization that was founded, financed by liberal Caucasians, Jews in particular, and a few pseudo black leadership. And they were used to undermine the unity within black communities by pushing integration. They were able to convince us to go from business owners, homeowners, political power, having a political power base. They were able to make us into business owners to business visitors. Now, under integration, we don't own our own businesses that offer services to our people. We visit other people's businesses. And integration has us financing that business and their children, the very owners, the very descendants of former slave owners. We're visitors now. We visit their restaurants. We visit their hotels. We visit their taxi and transportation companies. We visit their jobs. We're just a visitor on their jobs. We're a visitor until a crisis takes place. And then we're the last one hired, first one fired. We've been relegated to visitors due to integration. Now, so let me see. Based on integration, after Blacks all across America had been manipulated to support integration, within a matter of a few decades, Black-owned, ran, and operated communities were decimated, along with Black infrastructure that employed and maintained millions of Black families. The closing of Black schools meant Black teachers, administrators, office clerks, and janitorial staff lost their jobs. The closing of theaters, theater companies, bus companies, banks, grocery stores, farms, sports. A sports franchise mean we own the stadiums. We employed everybody in that stadium. We employed the players. We took care of them and their families. We made sure that they had the facilities to play, and the facilities were kept by Black men and women. All of that money that we used to circulate amongst ourselves under separate and unequal situations, we were gradually, over time, making it competitive to that of Caucasian people. We had doctors' offices, meatpacking plants, cab companies, healthcare facilities, dentists. We had everything that the Caucasian community had on a whole other level, maybe not as affluent and not as maybe not as affluent or well, having resources to make it look all nice, but we had the same thing that eventually with Black unity over time, because we would have been able to compete and even surpass Caucasian people. So after integration, the Black businesses deteriorated along with employment rates. Blacks were forced to rely on Caucasians for work. They were forced to endure being the last one hired and the first one fired. They were forced to endure substandard wages and working conditions. They were forced to endure a glass ceiling that they were more than qualified to break through while training a novice Caucasian who would eventually become their supervisor. They were reduced from home and land owners to home and land renters and leasers. So all this time, not only did our integration destroy our communities, but it also stripped us of a financial base to sponsor and subsidize our politicians. It broke up our communities to where our politicians now, they don't even stay in our communities. They stay in affluent Caucasian suburbs, or they stay in places where our population as Black people are depleted exponentially. We don't have that base that we had. We also, the educational facilities were taken. We had educational facilities all across, within the South that were Black administration, teachers, staff, and things of that nature. And now, right now, we have a HBCU that's becoming less effective and becoming financially bankrupt. So basically, voting along with integration, it pacified the effective Black activist. It gave us the illusion of inclusion. Voting now is being used to replace effective Black activism. The question is, have you voted? Have you voted? Rock the vote. When Caucasians are like, not only have we voted, but we financed the politician. We voted for this. We voted for him. We voted for her. We voted for this cause. The Black people cry for voting is just to vote. We don't have a who. We don't have a united what. And we do not have a united financial base to purchase the politician to champion our cause. We are not a constituency to any politician, to any party. We are a window shopper. We look how other parties and other people practice politics, and we window shop, hoping that the person inside the store is going to give us something when they walk out the store after they made their purchase. And all they do is walk past us with their goods. Because we don't have the unity economically, the communities to finance. We've been integrated, and we've been taught to just vote. I remember one year when P. Diddy was when I think it was when Barack Obama was running either first or second term. We had this rock the vote, just vote, just vote. And we had in closing, we had leaders, we had entertainers, we had sports figures just saying vote. And there was one thing, it don't matter who you vote for, just vote. That was a commercial. We don't matter who you vote for, just vote. Who does that as a people? How did we get manipulated and just voting? And they could put it on freaking advertisement. It don't matter who you vote for, just vote and expect anything from voting with that mindset. Jews, they vote in one accord. Asians vote in one accord. Caucasians vote in one accord. Hell, Hispanics, they vote in one accord. Only ones that's tripping is the ex-slave, the ex-African in bondage. We just vote. It's like if voting was likened to somebody who had a gun and they were shooting at a target. If the ballot box was the gun and the ballot's the bullet and the target's the politician, just voting would have you shooting your gun in the air or shooting it at the ground instead of at the target. It's just wasting your ammunition for nothing. You have no target. And the way we finance voting, we don't even have money for the bullets. I'd like to pose a question to the audience, like, what do y'all think? Based upon what I said, based upon us having, we had 100 politicians back in the days of the Reconstruction era that were fully invested in Black-owned, ran and operated values, community, was subsidized, champion our cause. We have 8,000 Black politicians today. Our political power was so strong back in the days that in Wilmington, North Carolina, after Black people won the election to control Wilmington, North Carolina, Caucasians ran them out of town. It was the first known coup, political coup d'etat, as it relates to elected government officials. It was the first coup d'etat ever in American history, where black elected officials were ran out of town due to the power of the black vote and the fear that Caucasians had to them running Wilmington, North Carolina. We would never do, we don't have any type of imagination on being that unified and that powerful today. So I'll pose it to the group. What y'all think about what I said about voting, about the fact
You
that
want to? We can start with Brother Mashinda.
can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Brother Mashinda.
Well, I mean, I think brother has identified, many things that not only has transpired over the years, but things that are happening now. I'm not in disagreement with most things that Brother Thomas is saying. The question about voting and losing our base and things like that. I mean, it's the age-old issue that we have. Those of us that are actively working, that have been working in the struggle, to identify what went wrong and how can we, it's kind of like the Humpty Dumpty story. Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall and had a good fall. It couldn't put Humpty back together again or whatever. It's like, things broken to pieces, so to speak, with all this going on, with things that have transpired. So, I mean, things that are you highlighting in tonight, I mean, I think that it's no question that, a lot of things went in the wrong direction. But at the same time, I look at a community down here where I'm located. I mean, it's gonna it's it, it I guess it takes time, and to speed up the process, you got to have willing participants and players in the game in order to make it work, but the different tactics and just the unequal playing field has made it difficult in a lot of ways, for us to get our footing back, and if you look at now, as time goes on, I'm not too optimistic in certain ways. I'm optimistic for some, but for the masses, because I'm looking at the technology that's in play, that's controlling the mindsets of different generations now, and to try to reel people in to actually understand, like what you're saying. Is it that's a task in itself. If you take 100 people, they're like, in other words, people have their own ideologies nowadays, their own beliefs. So in other words, you can bring certain people together on a common accord and make things happen, in, I guess, in a smaller, like, microcosm, and hopefully it grow and catch on to where it can have an effect, in another, in another state per se, or another city. But, like I say, down here, I'm seeing where we take the Caucasian has dominated down here. I'm in the South, this, down these towns, and I'm noticing that, and not just this town, but in a few towns, black people are starting to take over these towns, after all these years of slavery was down here, and all that. So I'm, for the first time, you're seeing a black man being a mayor in certain towns and police chief in certain towns, things like that. So my point is, there's still a sense of unity in these parts. But there's still a lot of infiltration of the mind where, you have a lot of miseducation, misguided influences and things like that, where people aren't, taking heed to what we're talking about, what you're talking about. So, I mean, it's still a struggle, but I'm saying is, so I'm seeing some advancements as far as Black people are trying to take back the control of the tax base and that type of thing. I know in the city of Compton, Black people had control of the tax base, there were some early times where things were okay, and then things changed where Black people had things in his grasp, and then things change, whether it's white flight and demographic changes and crime and whatever reason. But so I'm looking at just the kind of a resurgence of there are some areas, and again, we're not talking, I know you're talking about as a whole, but I'm just saying there are some efforts, and there are some people that are stepping up, but is it enough, to make change or to influence, the struggle on another level? Well, we'll see, but again, I don't have a really a comment. Things you stated, I mean, it's plain as day. You talk about, Black Wall Street being, one of the places, one of the areas that was infiltrated where there are Black business. Down here where I'm at, they got Black baseball teams and businesses and all kind of things, before integration. And I know a lot of people that lived this, and told, my relatives, what was happening back in the 50s and 40s and even early 60s, and now it's kind of like it's a whole nother situation. So how did that happen? So, but anyway, so I'm just listening, and I appreciate you coming on. It's but my answer, you mentioned voting. I mean, like I say, it's I don't know. They talk about monolithic. People aren't monolithic. We might have been at one time where we might have shared certain ideologies, and we was on one accord to a certain degree. But so hopefully we can glue that back together or continue to get that back together. I won't stop. But anyway, I'm done. But thank you for coming on, Brother Thomas.
My pleasure. I got a question though, Brother Mashinda. Is you talked about monolithic. Jews are not monolithic. They're monolithic, but when it comes to their cause, bro, when it comes to what benefits Jews, it has nothing to do
I'm sorry.
with monolithic. It's about
Yeah.
Black people need to be unified. Monolithic don't mean I'm going to manipulate the thoughts of those who I unify with. It just means that we have a common cause that we need to address to make sure that all Black families, men, women, and children, have an environment of opportunity, ambition, peace, harmony, food, clothing, and shelter, love, peace, and happiness. You know what I'm saying? Money, good homes, friendships, and all walks of life. That's a universal interest of Black people that we need to champion, regardless of Democrat, Republican, Christian, Catholic, Jew, Muslim, agnostic, atheist, you know what I'm saying? Profession. And that's how, I mean, the problem is not monolithic thoughts and being one-minded. The problem is integration has obliterated a unified Black thought and unified Black power base to secure what we all deserve as former Africans in bondage, as most incarcerated, as the less economically viable in America, most unemployed. All those things affect us, and it's the fact that they attack us with these concepts. Now we're being attacked by anti-sexual behavior, interracial relationships, Black women being indoctrinated into deserting their femininity and substituting it for masculine ideas and ideology and a level of functionality. We're being attacked on all fronts, and we have no response. Has nothing to do with what I believe personally. It's the fact that we've been constantly bombarded with lies, with manipulation, with false sense, false solutions that were created by an enemy to ensure that we fail in every aspect of that work.
All right. Can I step in now? So I'm listening to what you're saying, Brother Thomas, and I listen to Brother Mashinda. And I hear some similar thoughts. And the value system that's in place right now is sort of devalued. You know, for it, in order for us to, if we're looking at a black base, we at least have to organize to the point where we share some core values, because right now we're all over the place as a unit. We're kind of deunified in a sense. Professor Ra always talks about, you know, the progress, the struggle, and I understand that. What we're doing here right now is we have a core base that's been meeting for 2 years now, over 2 years. And with everything, you know, the desegregation, with everything that has happened, now it's up to us to get to the point where we have politicians that's going to look out for the best interests of us. So it's up to us to do something about our situation. And I hear you clearly, Brother Thomas, and I heard Brother Mashinda. But my coach used to always say this: if it is to be, it's up to me. We have to do something, because I think we have an understanding, a good understanding of what's going on. And we have to tap into Professor Ra. Professor Ra's in his 70s now, and we have to get all we can get out of him. We got to get all we can get out of ourselves to start organizing, because we already have an organizing unit. We just have to, you know, like Dr. Strong, she's ready to start the Black Table. And this is a meeting amongst nationwide people in areas, so we can start building a political base. And in local politics is a thing that we could start dealing with. But I think that we have the solutions. We just got to get it going. And I know we have the fortitude and will. It's just a matter of us. You know, we have to put it together. And I understand clearly that we're under attack in all areas. And you mentioned some things, Brother Thomas. I'm appalled at all of the values that are really just, it's valueless, the things that we do. I'm talking about all people. So we have to be the vanguard, as Professor Amin-Ra said, of morality, and start doing some things, in which we've already started. So I appreciate you bringing this topic up, but we got our work cut out for us for the rest of our lives, and then we have to have somebody to take over once we're not here. So that's all I got to say. I guess we can go to Professor Ra and get his input.
Yeah. Yeah. Excuse me, man. I'm doing the best I can. Appreciate what's been said, but I understand correctly. I want to say, Sante, to Thomas for his perspective. And it's one that's shared by a lot of Black people. They don't vote. Only about 35% of us vote. And of that 35% that vote, about 90% of that 35% vote. And there's different reasons Black people don't vote, for a lot of reasons. And that percentage of people voting is among all ethnic groups, It's not 100% Asians vote, it's not 100% Jewish people vote, even though they're white. It's not 100. The issue of politics is not just voting in a Eurocentric system. It's also getting your people to develop political, economical power within their and developing political strength. Your critique is one in which is not a part of the diversity of us as a people. We are diverse people. You got some Black people that are Jehovah's Witnesses, some Black people that are Muslim, some Black, and even among the Muslim community, there's diversity. 5% of them, Al-Islam, there's different ones that practice different perspective of Islam, some are not, And same thing with Christians, Baptists, Methodists, all of that, and they all struggle and compete for the minds of the people. To suggest that Black people shouldn't vote, if they want to listen to that perspective and accept the rationale that you gave, fine. But most people listen to their ministers, listen to their family, listen to their teachers, and some just grow and mature and decide, well, I guess I'll just start participating in the system. We're already segregated to a certain degree. I mean, racism has not stopped in this country. Most Black people live among Black people or among other minorities. White folks got communities all over the place where they have isolated themselves from Black people. And I'm not just talking about that. Those up in the mountains and Alleghenies and all of that. But right here in urban cities, you go out to Silver Lake, you go out to Santa Barbara, 1% Black people. You go out to San Diego, you're talking about 4 or 5% Black people. You go out, you see, at one time, because of segregation, total segregation, total enforced segregation with law that was broken down, because one time it was legal to segregate. I mean, that was just it. I mean, and it was legal to abuse and misuse people of different ethnic racial bases. Now, most Black leaders say we should fight on all fronts. Some that want to fight for economics, some want to fight for culture, some want to fight for self-defense. But I appreciate Claude Anderson, but I look at Malcolm, who says the ballot of the bullet. He's talking about vote. At one time, Minister Farrakhan organized the Nation of Islam to vote for Jesse Jackson until they held a fallout. For those that want voting and want to participate and want to believe that they can, as Mashinda was pointing out, make Euro-American institutional progress, that's their choice. To demonize or criticize people for voting is not going to stop them from voting. It's just not, because the people that they put stock in are telling them to vote, and as far as saying vote, just register to vote, it doesn't matter who you vote for, there's a lot of reasons people say that, because of the fact that, you know, there some are nonprofit churches and nonprofit structures, and they ain't supposed to endorse anybody. The NAACP was started mainly by Jews and Blacks. And then Du Bois brought his organization in, and they took a different stand, and they ran the Jews out to a certain degree. Just like in the Civil Rights Movement, you know, it was an integrationist movement. It's for integration and changing laws that were segregation laws. Racism is not just personal white people prejudice. They had laws that legalized the abuse, misuse, and laws against Black people getting an education, laws against them holding office, laws against them doing all those type of things. So while Black people were here, many of them, they had Back to Africa movements and things of this nature that didn't really get off because the system still needed some of their skilled labor at that time. So they sabotaged all the Back to Africa movement. And even to this day, you know, with Black people with resources, they don't move to Africa. They are Americans by habit. Being an American is like you telling Black people not to vote is like telling a crackhead to quit smoking crack. That ain't gonna stop them. You just saying you need to stop because it's killing you. You stop because you're taking money from your babies and kids. That don't stop a crackhead from that. You're not gonna stop a lot of women from coloring their hair yellow and going to get operations to sharpen their nose and things of this nature. Because it's an addiction, it's an affliction, it's an indoctrination. It takes years of education. You got to choose to be Black. Choose to be Black. And they got to choose not to vote. I mean, that's a choice. Anybody making Black people vote? You know, Black people ain't going around getting shotguns saying, y'all come out the house, y'all go vote. And y'all gonna go and things this next? No, these Black people go and they stand in line on their own for whatever reason. That for each person that's in line, there's a different reason why they're voting. Now, it's difficult to convince Black people that there's not been progress through struggle to participate in this institution and take it over. Let me give you an example, then I'll share. At one time, Black people couldn't be quarterbacks or centers or middle linebackers in football, and especially college, major college, and universities, and pros. Now Black people taking it over. At one time, Black people couldn't get elected statewide or citywide. They don't get elected in school boards and local elections. There's over 800,000 elected officials in this country. 800,000. Black people make up something like maybe 800. You understand? I mean, in this country, you know, I mean, school board, local this, local that. And the number one official that's Black people hold office is judges. That has the most Black people in political institutional position. We have a class problem. We have religious conflicts and challenges with different leaders telling us different things to do. So some people say, look, I ain't doing nothing, because this one say don't do this and this one don't say don't do that. I mean, Marcus Garvey and Du Bois was fighting, Malcolm and Elijah Muhammad, the Panthers and the US organization. I mean, you know, it's just conflict. You know, you got gangs fighting. You know, you got more Black people in motorcycle clubs than in political action organizations. You know, maybe the Kings of Africa, maybe the this group or that group. I mean, it's amazing. So your position of black people not voting, they're already not voting, the majority of them. It's like the majority of black people don't go to church. A lot of black people do go to church, but the majority don't go. You know, they're just a religious, you know. I mean, I'm not gonna be, I don't believe in none of it. You know, then there are some that are committed to their religion. Then they go out and try to evangelize others to accept their way of the world or their vision of the world. Struggle is a constant struggle. Unity is very difficult. To try to tell black people there's no progress in voting is to say, as I shouldn't say that, black people that are elected as mayors, as school board members, as secretaries of state, as governors, is a waste of time. You're saying that Martin Luther King was crazy and really was a betrayal of us as a people by fighting for integration. That was just his strategy. He thought that that would make it right. I'm for people with their views. And show me the benefit of your view. Show me the benefit of your view. And if that benefit supersedes my values, enhance what I want to be about, I'll join you. But just telling people you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that, and segregation was bad, that's a hard sell to black people who want to move into different integrated neighborhoods. I think Minister Farrakhan, they asked him once, you know, don't you live in a white neighborhood? He said, no, it's integrated. You know, I mean, most black people that's affluent don't live in the community. You know, I mean, and some of it's by choice. You understand? A lot of black people say, I'm the only black guy, you know, in my neighborhood on top of this hill. You know, and they're happy. And you're not going to get them off their hill. And it's going to be hard to tell black people that integration is bad because the earth belongs to the creator of the earth and the universe. The planet is already integrated. I don't care how many fences and laws you pass. People break them. Black people and white people have been screwing each other for years. Even when they was on the plantation, they do it in the prisons. They do it on the streets. Some of the greatest black leaders married white women. Some of the most productive. So, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Imamu Baraka. Others married. Oh, man, it's a rough struggle if you're going by individuals. But I believe in voting. I practice voting. Just to go where the people are and just struggle the way they want to struggle. But then again, I'm a black nationalist. I'm like you. I live in the black community, never moved out. You understand? And stay here with me. And now black people moving out, Mexicans moving in. I'm still here holding out. But I don't criticize black people or family members that moved to Riverside, moved to Rancho Cucamonga, moved to Corona, moved to Temecula. If that's what they want to do, go ahead. You got the money and the resources. I don't want to wake up and see a bunch of white people running around. You understand? Hi, hello there, waving at me and shit. You know, I don't want that. I like exactly where I'm at. And those that want to move, fine. You know, I can't criticize them. And I think it's going to be difficult for you, no matter how much you write or argue, to tell black people not to vote when you got millions of people and leaders like Al Sharpton. They got a bigger megaphone. They got more money. They're encouraging people to vote. Reverend Berber of the Poor People Campaign. They got major organizations. Maybe the big Christian churches. They just tell them to vote. They what is that? Polls for the Soul, Souls to the Polls in Atlanta. Man, that's a whole history. That's a history. You're trying to tell me the Sager don't do it. You know, it's going to be a hard struggle, but, you know, you're entitled to teach that and write that. And, you know, others believe that your position of that we need to stop being around white people, start our own businesses and things of this nature. You know, that's going to be a hard sell. That's about all I got to say. I work with black people that want to be black. I can't argue with the ones that want to marry white people or hang out and do integrationist thing. I'm not an integrationist. You understand? But I'll get my check from a white man if I work for him and go home. Take care of my family and my community, pay my house, know the rent with it. You know, and most of us work for white people, our white institution. You understand? And we work there because of the security, the health benefits. You know, that's why black people, it's hard for them to start their own schools because they don't have the resources to provide a retirement and other things that people need when as they get older. So that's all I got to say right now, but I think it's a good position. And it's not, like I said, it's not new. There's been a lot of black people that argue black people shouldn't vote from, and there's a lot of religious organizations and activist organizations that do not participate in your American vote. Even the Black Panthers. You know, Elvis Cleveland ran for president, and they said you have to fight the system from within. There are a lot of black people that argue that's how you defeat racism and defeat the system by getting in it and being a virus. And that's all I got to say. Yeah.
Thank you, Baba Ra. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with what you said. And that's been my problem is, you know, I look at the condition of our people. I look at the partying. I look at the indoctrination. I look at the divisions. I look at the factions that society invests in to keep us divided. Because you're absolutely correct. I mean, the faith-based initiatives pacifies the churches. And I remember you saying that, you know, certain institutions, you know, they don't say who to vote for because they're somehow not supposed to or they're not allowed to. But guess, but I bet you the institutions that, you know, that these other groups have formed, they tell who and what to do to the people that they tell. I mean, we know that based upon how unified they are, the institutions that they have where they meet, whether it could be their worshiping institutions, their educational institutions, their businesses, they all agree what to do and how to do it politically.
Can I ask you a question before you go further?
Yeah.
Did you know they are unified?
Because of the outcome?
No. I said, what group? Name me a group, a race group, religious group, or ethnic group that's unified.
Jews are unified.
Jews got a Republican a part of the Jews, and they got Democrats. They got
most Jews,
many of them don't vote. Just look at the statistics.
Well, it doesn't matter how many vote. The ones who do are unified. Now, Caucasians are pluralistic. I mean, they're not pluralistic. They're omnipartisan. Caucasians are involved with Independent Party, Libertarian Party, Green Party, Democrats, Republicans, but they all champion a cause of making sure that Black people or people of color in general are at the bottom and they're at the top. And they use their any political party or think tank, that is the common conclusion. It doesn't matter what party they're in. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many vote. The ones that do exercise that right are unified in their efforts. They have a cause. They have politicians that they support, that they finance. It doesn't matter about the amount. It's a matter about those involved being unified and championing a cause to benefit their people. If we had 10 people that had the money and resources to champion a cause for Black people as a whole, it wouldn't matter if a million voted, if those 10 billionaires championed a cause to benefit the millions of Black people, because that's what would be done. So it's like everybody who uses the political system do what I stated before. When they use in the political process correctly. Black people, we don't as a mass. You know, when Black Wall Street was created, it was only created by a handful of millionaires, but it benefited thousands of Black people. Only was created by a man who bought a tract of land and a whole, you know, a few blocks of acres of property and began to rent and sell and lease buildings to his own people to build businesses and created a Wall Street. Only a handful. So if we had a handful of billionaires that chose to unify to benefit and contribute towards the betterment of the condition of Black people as a whole, it wouldn't matter if Black people, if the millions of Black people voted or not. It's the power and the unity of those few to finance and to champion a cause, put their money where their mouth is. So that's how they do it. And this is what I've researched. This is how it's done. And you're right. There's Caucasians have spent so much money and time, billions of dollars, making sure that Black people are divided, making sure that we kill each other either with a pen or with the mouth or with a gun. Make sure that we're easily indoctrinated. Our children are most uneducated. Parents are most, you know, shirking on their responsibility. All these situations in our community, in our neighborhoods, not communities, neighborhoods, it's all been done to do exactly what it's doing. And it's so successful. It's almost like what I'm saying is a fantasy. We're so lost. You know, I'm just stating it because we have a platform to elicit positive thought, to elicit solutions from what we see. And this is just what I see, Baba Ra. It's just what I see. I know exactly what you said. Black people has been funded. They've been manipulated. They've been bought to act the way we're acting. And we do not have anything close to the resources to reverse the con, to reverse the condition. I'm just expressing what I see. And it hurts to say it. It hurts to see it. The Caucasians attacked us when they saw that we were under the worst segregated circumstances, but we were beginning to surpass them. Our athletes, you mentioned athletics. You mentioned all, you know, we're not taking over sports. We're employees. We're not owners. We're visitors. We don't even make money off of the stadium, you know, the positions. We used to own the stadiums. And we used to work those. Everybody that worked in the stadium was Black. We don't have no power when it comes to sports. We're being used. And when Massa says, shut your mouth and dribble, or I will take your money and your job, and I will assassinate your character, I will demonize you, like they're doing Kyrie Irving, shut up and dribble like they did LeBron James. Yes, a boss, please don't take my money. Please don't take my livelihood. Yes, a boss, I'll do it. Even though you made the draft totally parallel to a freaking slave block. Yes, a boss, it's obvious I'm a slave. And you own me. And oh yeah, by the way, you can trade me, separate me from my family while I'm looking for a home in the city that you spontaneously traded me to. No different than the families being separated during slave trade. Come on now. This is not done by accident. Athletics is slavery. Entertainment is slavery. There were the slaves outnumbered the slave owner on the slave plantation. And that did not mean that they were powerful. That did not mean that they took over the plantation. That did not mean that they had any influence and power and rights whatsoever. Slaves outnumbered the slave owner on the plantation 100-1. Just like in athletics and entertainment. Doesn't mean anything. I'm done. Anybody have any other comments? Because I'm ready to wrap this up.
Brother Mashenda?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Pastor Ron?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, they're not slaves because they trade their labor for money. No, they don't own teams and things. Some of them don't own teams, but there have been Black people that have invested. The Williams sisters are part owner. Magic Johnson is part owner of things. LeBron is trying to buy a football team in Vegas or some, a basketball team. Their efforts, it took a long time for us to get. You're right. We're the most abused people. There's no question about that. You understand? But you struggle against it. They kept us, like Martin Luther King said, I may not get there when you get there, but we will as a people get to the promised land. And that's to free ourselves to be ourselves. You'd be surprised if the Black people are just happy and comfort in their oppression. To say that Black people are not doing anything and that they're slaves, they can say that about anybody. They can say that about teachers. Y'all just slaves for the white establishment. You should start your own schools and do this. We used to have Black schools, but charter schools, took away. And what are you going to tell a Black person running a school? They'll make their school a charter school, and they're going to get big money to do it? I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I respect your position, you know, and it's good. And if that's what you believe and that's what you want other Black people to believe, fine. And I wish you all the luck in getting them to see things that way. You know, but I just think it's a hard struggle. All right there, Roger King.
Roger King? Yes, sir. Okay, Brother Thomas.
I got a closing.
What's that?
I got a closing remark.
Go ahead.
Knowing how sensitive this subject of this investigation is, I think that would be underestimating them. So what they're doing, they're...
So, I really appreciate the words that Baba Ra expresses as it relates to his position about the stance that I'm taking. I'm going to quote the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. The success of a few Black people does not translate into the success of the whole. You mentioned Serena and Venus. Venus with some Caucasian interracial. Serena also frequents interracial relationships. A lot of our women use them as role models, and by doing so, opens them up for similar decisions, not having relationship with us Black men. Athletes and inner athletes are bound by their contract to of being purchased and financed that they can't do or say certain things. They can't even use their money for certain things as it pertains to really effectively addressing the condition, improving the condition of our people. And also, athletics makes it, you know, tends to always find the athlete that's most unconscious, unaware of their, of who they are, the history of their people. Kyrie Irving is the first one that we, you know, vocalized an African consciousness and awareness and willing to stand on it. I appreciate Professor Ra's position. My position stance is that little specks of money here and there is also a tool to keep us divided. We just Christmas just passed, and our athletes and entertainers find some type of an accomplishment with giving in charity, giving toys. Stevie Wonder has a toy freaking musical concert every year. This is ridiculous. Charity? Charity does not change. It's charity. We've been conditioned to think that charity is actually making a difference. Caucasians have invested in manipulating our minds in doing frivolous, worthless, meaningless things with the resources they give us. And our athletes and entertainers find comfort in toys, charity, feeding somebody for a day, clothing somebody for a day. That's the problem. We play feel-good politics, and we play feel-good moments of useless charity that makes the individual feel like, hey, I'm giving back. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. They're giving back to keep us back and never giving forward to take us out of this situation, to take us forward that blesses future generations with money, good homes, friendships, with all walks of life, businesses. It only took a handful of wealthy people to build Black Wall Street. And we have thousands of millionaires and billionaires in America, Black. And none has the wherewithal to do one city. So like what Brother Mashinda said, he lives in the South and he sees certain poor Black people, middle class or less, striving to do what our wealthy class ain't doing at all with their resources. Our entertainers ain't doing shit. Ms. Cindy, you're absolutely correct. But it's humiliating to say that our brothers and sisters with their pennies are fighting to do some stuff that our wealthy class ain't doing and ain't got the mindset to do. These slaves in entertainment and athletics, pump them, all of them. This is bullshit. Excuse me. This is bull. This is bull. Professor Ra, I love you. And I thank you for teaching me and guiding me on the path that I am, being one of the brothers that Allah sent to me in my growth while I was in college to see what I see critically. Your classes and how you created leadership amongst us. You know, to do what we're doing, to champion the cause in the best way that I'm doing it. Yeah, I am a slave as a teacher. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, bro. I am. I rely on this government for my home, my food, my shelter. And even though I try to use my platform to teach consciousness in class, I am forced to teach material that I know is not benefiting our people. But me being there, I fulfill a purpose, a nationalist purpose. So I love you, bro. And I thank you for being one of the few men that Allah sent in my life to guide me towards being the man I am today. But that's just my view on how I see it. Thank you, Brother Rasaki, for this opportunity. Thank you, Brother Mashinda, for your beautiful words. And may God continue to bless the brothers and sisters out there that's doing what our athletes and entertainers ain't got the testicular fortitude or the fallopian fortitude to do themselves. Thank you for this opportunity. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Well, Brother Thomas, are we going to be able to do the show next week?
Yeah, my dad said it's good.
Okay, so next week we have Brother Thomas and his dad coming on. And he's going to let us know. Can you tell us briefly what we're going to be doing?
My father, he had a hard life of child abuse, crime, and then he became a Black Panther. He watched the rise and fall of the Panthers, went back to crime, and then he decided to clean his life up. Got his bachelor's degree, master's degree, doctoral degree in religious studies. And he, until he was unable to do so anymore, he went back into the prisons to reduce recidivism and to teach the brothers in jail how to take control of their life and make better decisions based upon his example. And I just thought that he'd be a good person to interview and to expose to this beautiful platform of the successes of a Black man in the wilderness of North America, in the hells of North America, how he's transversed through the worst to the best of situations and was able to rear his children. Gave me his name, enabled me to claim him and claimed me, and in the midst of him being divorced with my mom, but he's a success story that I'd like to introduce to the community.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And we just enjoy when we have a parent and offspring on here. It's just wonderful to see. And we didn't had, you'll be the third pair of, Professor Ra had his sons on here. So, and I had a few of my kids and grandson on here. So it's just the family interaction and see how things are going to be and see how things was. It's just a beautiful thing. So we appreciate you coming on and appreciate that opportunity to hear your father and his story. So that's gonna be a good one, just like this evening. Excellent. So I appreciate you, Brother Thomas. Keep up the excellent work. Appreciate Professor Ra and Brother Mashinda coming on here, giving their time to educate us. It's just a wonderful thing that I think we're doing. And we're going to keep doing it till we can't do it. So each one to each one in Conscious Corner. We'll be back on Monday. Professor Ra, you're on mute.
Yeah, I'll call you in the morning.
Okay. All right, everybody. Have a good evening. And Brother Thomas, stay on a second here.
Yes, sir.